Welcome to News Tribune on Tap. I'm Gary Castor, managing editor at the Jefferson City News Tribune and host of News Tribune on Tap, a weekly conversation about news and issues in Jefferson City that matter to you. Today's special guest is Sarah Hamilton. Hello, Sarah.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well, doing well. So Sarah is chairwoman at Room at the Inn here in Jefferson City. For those who may not know, Sarah, kind of give folks an idea of what Room at the Inn is.
So Room at the Inn is an emergency low barrier shelter that is open over the winter in Jefferson City. Low barrier meaning we don't require an ID or a background check to stay. At Salvation Army, they house children, and so they have to do the background check and require the ID, and that's important, but that leaves a gap for folks who may not be able to pass a background check or for whatever reason burned bridges there. They can have a place to stay too. We opened this year from December 1st through March the 15th. No matter the temperature, I know some shelters, you know, if the temperature gets below a certain, we skip over that and just say we're going to be open. We opened at 5:30 in the evening and closed at 7 o'clock the next morning. And during that time, folks would get usually a hot meal in the evening and breakfast of some sort. Sometimes it was hot, sometimes it was just cereal. 100% volunteer run. Uh-huh. We have no paid staff at this time, which is monumental.
Oh, yeah.
It's incredible how the community came together. While they're there, after they we don't have showers, but we do. We had a TV they could watch. Most of them just went straight to bed.
Yeah.
And they get a good night's sleep. And that makes a huge difference to somebody who, when they're not in Room at the Inn, a good night's sleep is hard to come by.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So let's talk about some logistics of it. So first of all, where is it held at?
This year we were at First Baptist Church. They had kind of a space above their gym that they weren't using. And we were in search of a place. And they said, well, why don't we try this?
Okay.
And it was quite nice. It had two separate rooms so we could sleep men and women separately, which I know the women appreciated. And it had the bathrooms in the middle. It had laundry facilities. Somebody bought us a washer and dryer at the beginning of the season so we could wash. We couldn't do guest laundry because 20 people's laundry in a night is kind of a tall order. But that way we could wash linens a couple of times a week and make sure folks had clean sheets to sleep on and that sort of thing.
Sure.
And it was a welcome space. It was a lot different from what we'd been used to, but the guests seemed to appreciate how we set it up and liked it a lot better.
Okay. So on average, how many guests would be there each night?
We have a capacity of 20, but most nights we averaged around 19, actually.
Okay.
There were a couple of nights we had 11 or 12, but most evenings it was 15 or more. We noticed an uptick in February. And it wasn't even particularly cold out. We were like, why are we full every night? We were turning, one night we turned 8 people away, but
sure,
we couldn't figure out why. And then we realized in a side conversation, Salvation Army only opens their cold cots if it's below 32 degrees. And it was above 32 degrees.
Yeah.
And so we were getting the folks that usually went to Salvation Army and coming to us because we had beds.
Sure, sure.
So for a while, there was quite the competition to see who could get in line first.
Oh my, yeah.
And get a bed because it's first come, first serve. We don't take any reservations.
Yeah.
You got to get in line if you want a place.
Absolutely. And so when guest arrives, what will he or she see? There are cots. What other sort of amenities are there that they could enjoy?
Well, when they first arrive, for safety for everybody involved, they give up most of their possessions. Whatever they're carrying around, we check in, put in a secure storage room overnight. They can keep meds, give them smoke breaks, and they can keep toiletries if they need to brush their teeth or whatever.
Right.
We check them in and they get to choose wherever they're going to sleep. Men in one room, women in the other, obviously. There were some cots in the corners that were primary on state. They get a pillow, a blanket, and if they need more blankets, they can have more blankets. And then within about an hour, they're eating dinner. And there's a TV if they want noise or whatever. Some people ate at the table. Some people took it back to their cot and kind of kept to themselves. It was just dependent on the person and what kind of day they had and what kind of mood they were in.
Sure.
We had toiletries available. So if somebody wanted to wash up in the bathroom, we had kind of like dry shampoo, but dry body wash.
Yeah.
We also had soap. We had toothpaste, toothbrushes, deodorant, that sort of thing that they could use. The space didn't have showers. And so that's not something we could offer. And I don't know that it would be wise to try to do that in an overnight for 20 people. But that would be a logistical hurdle. So, and it was warm.
Yeah.
And if it was raining, it was dry. And that's our primary mission. We want folks to have a safe and dry and warm place to sleep.
Yeah.
All the extras are extra.
Sure.
We have volunteers who love to just go home and, oh, I noticed this guy needed a pair of pants, or this person needed a jacket or a coat or whatever. But as an organization, our role is to shelter people who need shelter.
So as you mentioned, it's volunteer run. So how many volunteers do you have? Presumably not the same person every night throughout the course of that season, right?
Right. It was 15 weeks long and we had over 300 volunteers.
Mm. Wow.
The official number was, when I ran my report, it was 289 volunteers worked 1,103 shifts.
Wow.
But when dinner happens, sometimes one person signs up and they bring a team from church or a group of friends, or one of the Rotary groups provided meals a couple of times. Then there was no way to count that.
Yeah.
We had 289 individuals sign up for a shift, but it was never just that.
Yeah.
So we had over 300 volunteers.
Wow. That's a lot. So, and obviously, volunteer doesn't work from 5:30 to 7:30. There are three waves. Is that right?
There are three shifts. Yeah. We have an evening shift that runs about from 5:30 until 11.
Mm-hmm.
And then the overnight shift comes in and they work until 5 a.m. And then the morning shift comes in for the last 2.5 hours. The morning shift is my favorite shift. You sit around for an hour while they sleep because lights come on at 6. And then it's hurry up and wait for them to get out, and then clean like mad once they're out the door. So we vacuumed and cleaned the bathrooms and mopped and swept and sanitized all the cots and made sure that everything was ready for the next night. We had a volunteer who took on the role of doing laundry for us. She would come in twice a week during the day and just run the laundry. She also maintained our Amazon wish list anytime we had supplies that we needed, whether it be sanitizing wipes, sanitizing spray, bathroom cleaner, toilet paper, paper towels, whatever. She'd posted on our Amazon wish list and we couldn't keep the thing filled. We'd get so many emails and Facebook comments. The wish list is empty. And they would be almost angry.
Like, oh, gosh.
Sorry.
Yeah.
We have everything we need right now.
Right, right.
So folks were always just on top of it, super generous.
Good.
But yeah, the hardest shift to fill was the overnight shift. You can't sleep.
Right.
And I did that the year before last. I even did it on a like Martin Luther King weekend because I worked for the state. So I had Monday off. So I worked like an overnight on Saturday thinking I'd have all day Monday to recover and I'd be good to go. Not as young as I used to be. It took me 3 days to recover.
Oh, goodness.
And so it's a tall order to ask somebody to come in and stay up all night and not nod off, keep yourself entertained.
Right.
Because luckily, most nights, there wasn't a whole lot going on in the overnight. There was just, somebody described it as the most peaceful part of their life at that point because they just come in and listen to people snore.
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful sound,
you
know, when you're not trying to sleep and all that, but it's actually quite peaceful. When I went in the mornings just to sit and listen to people sleep for an hour, and it's a profound sense of humility and gratitude that we're able to do this for them and that they can get some sleep.
Yeah. Now that the season's over,
mm-hmm.
what were some of the challenges that the ministry faced this year that you'll be trying to address, obviously, next year?
Sure. So one of the big things that we noticed this year is being at First Baptist, we were way more accessible because the year prior we were at Catholic Charities and most of our guests hitched a ride with us. We provided a shuttle from the library to the shelter.
Mm-hmm.
And that required a certain amount of responsibility to be able to be at that location at the right time to catch a ride. A certain level of responsibility, executive function, a certain with-itness, for lack of a better word. And without that this year, we saw a huge increase in mental health issues and all of the behaviors and challenges that come with, I mean, one person with a severe mental illness is a challenge, but when you put multiple in two rooms together, and you could tell by the end of the season, folks were We're getting tired of each other's little idiosyncrasies, and just like, you know, we do with our kids over Christmas break, you know, okay, time for you to go back to school. There was no going back to school, you know, and they hang out in the same places during the day too. And so it's a lot of togetherness, but that was our biggest challenge. We are in conversations with Compass to have some de-escalation training next year. Probably we're looking around September, and some mental health 101 training, just because most of us don't deal with a lot of that day to day. And so what happens when somebody with a severe mental illness is in crisis and can't calm down, no matter how much they need to? And no matter how quickly you call law enforcement, you're still responsible for the other volunteers and for the other guests in that space. We're going to have some conversations with other stakeholders as well. We got a lot of drop-offs, whether it be somebody who just got out of the hospital, somebody who had been to the Compass 24-hour center or whatever, and say, okay, here you go. I remember at the very beginning of the season, somebody dropped off a man in a wheelchair, said, we'll be back to get him in the morning. Nobody showed in the morning. If you've ever been to the gym at First Baptist, it's at the bottom of a hill. This was a stout 20-something-year-old man, and my volunteers were not. And so trying to figure out how to get him up the hill and to a place where he was gonna be safe for the day. Another time, somebody dropped off a woman and her gallon Ziploc bag of meds. Here you go, make sure she gets her meds. We're not trained for that. We're volunteers. We can't be, and she was not lucid. So talking to some of the folks in town who have those interactions and think that we have the capability of doing that. So we're gonna be doing some bridge building and have some of those conversations over the summer as well, just because there are limits to what we can do. And I think that's the biggest struggle, is as much as we want to help, it's such a patchwork of just bits of services here and there, and there's no continuity. And a lot of our homeless are, whether it be substance abuse or just, we had several schizophrenics this year. I would struggle. I have a master's degree. I would struggle to figure out what resources are available where, whether it be healthcare or, okay, where can I get a meal tonight? Or where can I get my meds filled? Or where can I keep my money safe that it doesn't get stolen? And so you add that layer of complexity and just basic stress of not having a secure place. And even the only place where you can really hang out is the library. And sometimes we got to do better. I think that's something that our volunteers saw this year, is that especially we had some folks who had never volunteered with a homeless community before, and they were just overwhelmed by the need. We could provide everything that that person could want or need, but they're going to come back the next night and have either something else or the same need, because whatever you gave them that morning is now gone. For whatever reason. It's hard for us to keep our mind focused on what our goal is, what our mission is. And that's just to shelter people. I mean, we're all people with good hearts. And there's always the desire to want to do more, but that just creates added complications. And so until we figure out something better as a city, we do the best we can.
So from your perspective, again, as a volunteer, how big of a problem is homelessness in Jefferson City? How big is the population that we're talking about?
We housed 130 unique individuals this year. We had one lady who was escaping a mother who was having a blood sugar and mental crisis. And so she just came and stayed with us for a night. And some of our guests were here for a little bit and then moved on, whether that be to go to another state, go to Columbia where there's more resources. But it's bigger than just the groups that you see at the library. We had folks staying with us who had jobs. So it's bigger than you'd think. And I think I haven't gotten the point in time count or anything. And that's always only as accurate as it can be. Given the population we're trying to interact with.
I think that's always what's surprising to folks too, to hear that there are people who need those services who are employed, It's not they're just panhandling or just living on the streets. I mean, you can't define the unhoused with one label.
Because for every person there, there's a different story. The pastor once described it as someone who was supposed to love them didn't. Mm. And that created their spiral probably when they were kids.
Yeah.
Kind of that generational poverty idea. Some of it is mental health and needing mental health meds, but either not knowing where to access them. And then some mental health meds require a tight schedule. If you don't have somebody to care for you, to remind you when to take your meds.
Right.
And then some are just the substance abuse is part of that, kind of all of it. And we were aware of folks trying to prey on our folks because they're vulnerable.
Yeah.
And it's hard to save up money on the streets because everybody knows you're saving up money. So things get stolen all the time. It's just a mess.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, as you mentioned, I mean, Room at the End is one piece with a narrowly targeted mission of providing safe shelter during a season where the elements are harsh. So what other efforts are out there to help address this? Because it's not a seasonal problem. It's a year-long issue.
Right. Salvation Army is always there, obviously. But again, they have limits because they house families. That limits who they can take. And they have a finite amount of space. I'm on the board of HCJC, which is Housing the Community Jefferson City. We're working on finding some way to open a day center or a drop-in center where folks can just be. And we're looking for a location, so if you know of a place where that would be, we've had several things fall through. So if you know of a location, please reach out. It's Housing the Community Jefferson City. Google it. It'll come up. So we're looking at that. First United Methodist Church has kind of a drop-in, kind of you're welcome to hang out. They'll give them like a sack lunch, and they have lockers there. You can shower once a week there, so they have those options. Mm-hmm. And then I think there's a Through Compass, there's a new site being built out on Amazonia or Amazonas or something. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be more kind of a transitional housing type thing where they'll have mental health services, but then it's also going to have laundry and kitchen, and you have your own like mini apartment and you learn while you're there how to be housed and stay housed. Because those are skills that we take for granted.
Sure.
That some folks, if you've been homeless for 40 years, you might not know, you know, how do I do laundry or how do I cook a meal? And to provide some of those skills, I think that's just getting off its feet. But I'm excited about possibilities there.
Oh, all right. So obviously, this is a subject that's near and dear to your heart. So for those who are listening, what would you say to them? Why is this a subject that the city should really be looking at?
Oh, how long have you got? Why is this a subject that the city should be looking at? Because these are our citizens too. And the city charter doesn't say we'll provide services for only the people that pay taxes, because they're human beings. And just because they don't act like the way you think they should act or follow the social conventions that we were all raised with doesn't mean they aren't worthy of, I'm going to quote the pastor at First United Methodist, but they aren't worthy of loving and belonging and having a place to be safe. It was absolutely brutal on our volunteers when they had to turn people away this winter. I mean, imagine that for a minute. Imagine that you are standing at a door in a warm place, and somebody comes to your door and says, look, I'm really cold. I don't have a place to go. Can I just sit in a corner? Can I please come in? And I'm sorry, but no. Could you do it? It's really hard to look at another human being and say, I'm sorry, we don't have any space. A lot of it comes from the lack of affordable housing, which is we had one of our guests actually get housing at the end of the season. Right as we closed, he got an apartment, and it was a huge story. It was amazing. Our volunteers came together. We got his apartment furnished. Apparently, I have not seen it, but apparently it's like a minuscule place. This guy who was homeless now has $750 a month in rent to pay. Mm. That's what I pay for my mortgage. And I have a full-time job. Yeah, he's getting some subsidies, but still. Like, how can, and eventually, if you don't fix it for the low-income folks, it's going to be a problem for the medium-income folks. And not that the medium-income folks are worth more or more important. But if you don't speak up when it's not you, who's going to fight for you when it is you?
So for those who are listening, if they want to help, What are some methods and means of which they could do so?
So through HCJC, we have the Housing Community Jefferson City. We have three different projects. We have the Project Homeless Connect, where we backpack supplies for camping and food and socks, all those things. That's going to be in September. We have the Open Doors Project, and then we have Room at the Inn, all under that HCJC umbrella. If you go to that website, you can learn ways to volunteer. You can donate. If you know of a place where we could house our day center and Room at the Inn on a permanent basis, please let us know. There's a contact information on that page. You can email me at jeffersoncityratti@gmail.com. I will pass that information along. We're hoping next season to hire a part-time staff member to cover some of those hard-to-cover overnight shifts. So we're looking to raise some funds for that. And then follow us on Facebook, Jefferson City Room at the Inn on Facebook. That's how we communicate needs. And we'll be active over the summer, putting those needs out there. And then we're going to kick off some training and stuff in September as we gear up for another December 1st opening.
Okay. We'll put a lot of this information also in our show notes. Certainly check those out, as well as links to stories we've had about the unhoused community here in Jefferson City. So, Sarah, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for giving me the opportunity to share my passion.
Thanks for listening. You can find News Tribune on tap at newstribune.com, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Play.